We're in lesson number 13 in the book of 1 Samuel. Open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 9. We did not get very far in our last lesson in this chapter. We only got through two verses. But we're going to get on down for a little bit further. And I want to invite you to open your Bible to chapter 9, verse number 3. As we left off last week, we were talking about the selection of King Saul. And the writer had told us about Kish, his father's line, his ancestry all the way back through to Benjamin, and the physical appearance. And as we were talking about the physical appearance, Saul's physical appearance was he was taller, head and shoulders over everyone else in the whole nation of Israel. No one was taller than Saul. Everybody else in the nation came up to his shoulder. And also, he was the most handsome of all the men who were in the nation of Israel. So as we will soon see here in our story today, Saul's physical appearance was such that Saul, because of his size, would have a hard time hiding in the crowd. Now, as a special note here, no one knows the true age of Saul at this time. We know that he will reign for 40 years, but the age at the time he began to become king is unknown, but it is going to happen right here, 27 years before the ark is captured and then returned and stored for 20 years. Here's where we are in the timeline, 1 Samuel chapter 9. However, there are some parameters that we can use to come close to his age. First, in the nation of Israel, there was a long-standing rule that the priest could begin his training at the age of 25 and then begin as a full-fledged priest at the age of 30 doing things on his own. If you will remember, the Lord's divine plan, in that plan, the priests were the ultimate judges over the religious and civil lives of the people. Now, with the selection of King Saul, the people were willing to reduce the authority of the priest, push down the authority of the priest, and place the complete rule over their civil lives, not their religious lives, but their civil lives, under the authority of their new human king. Now, it is hard for me to believe that the nation would have accepted a king who was not yet 30 years of age, for the very reason was they would not accept a priest to be over their civil lives until he was 30. Now, some scholars indicate that Saul was 40 years of age when he became king, but their reasoning cannot be supported and cannot support that position either, because here's their reasoning. They say that he was 40 because his son Jonathan was a good friend of David. So Saul had to be at least 40 years of age when he became king. And that position really breaks down when we look at the timeline in the Bible and the timeline which I have showed you here. Okay? Whatever age Saul becomes at here, in the 10th year of Saul's reign, David's born 17 years before the stealing of the ark. Well, Saul could have had a son at the age of 30 that's going to be within 10 years of the age of David. So whenever David finally comes out 17 years later, Saul has a son that's right around the same age as David within just a few years. David was born in that 10th year of Saul's reign as king. So 17 years before the Ark of the Covenant was captured by the Philistines. So if Saul became king at the age of 30, he was then 40 when David was born, and he was going to be 57 years of age when the ark is captured. Saul is 57 when this ark is captured. So after the capture of the ark, and after the return of the ark, the Philistines would bring out their big boy Goliath right here. This is where it is, right here. Bring out his big boy Goliath. We're not there in the story yet, but I'm just telling you. So he comes on the scene. And why does Goliath come? Well, Goliath comes out because the Philistines have been cast out of Israel, and as long as Samuel's alive, they can't do anything. So they bring in their big boy Goliath, and they try to make a one-on-one challenge with somebody, and whoever wins the challenge will serve the other. And as you remember, reading ahead in the story, David wins against Goliath, and the Philistines really don't have any problem. In fact, David's not going to have any problem with the Philistines either, because Samuel has successfully got them kicked out, and Philistines can't get a foothold back on in the land. So the reason why we have Goliath come in is because we've got to have an introduction of David about the age of 17 when Saul was about 57, right here after the ark is returned. Now in 1 Chronicles chapter 8, verse 33, we learn this. Saul became the father of Jonathan, Malchishua, Abinadab, and Eshbal. Got it? Jonathan, Malchishua, Abinadab, and Eshbal. Now, don't look at Abinadab and say, oh, that's the Abinadab who stored the ark. Don't know that for sure. Absolutely, we don't know that. In fact, another thing is we don't know if these sons are listed in the order of their birth. We don't know if these four sons are in the order. Now, in the Old Testament, if the sons are listed in the order of the birth, they are usually identified as with the listing of Benjamin's sons, such as in 1 Chronicles chapter 8, verse 1, which says this, "And Benjamin became the father of Bela, his firstborn." So you see that text? And that it goes on for that, his secondborn, etc. Now, because that is not the case in this passage, Gad probably listed the sons of Saul by their order of prominence in the story of the nation of Israel. Thus, Jonathan was probably the most prominent, as we know, of Saul's sons, but may not have been the oldest. Nevertheless, when David was about the age of 17 and came into Saul's life, Saul was about the age of 57, Jonathan, possibly being Saul's youngest, was still old enough to be David's friend, to be married, and to have children by the time of his death. However, in chapter 13, we will discover that in Saul's second year as king, Jonathan will be in control of some of Saul's army. Now, that information will lead us to conclude that Jonathan might well have been Saul's oldest son, because right in here, whenever all this is going on, right after he has turned king, they're going to capture a garrison, but it's going to be Jonathan leading the men, and we're going to get to that as we go on down here in these next chapters. So that means Jonathan had to be old enough to lead some men, at least some young men, 1,000, by the way, to go oust some of the Philistines. But remember, the Philistines haven't been ousted yet, because that's not going to happen until after the ark is captured and returned. But King Saul and Jonathan are going to really rain havoc on the Philistines here before the ark, because the battle with the Philistines is going on early on in Saul's life. So therefore, whether Saul was 30 or whether he was 40 at the time of becoming king is really insignificant to the story. But there is one more important thing that we need to address. When Saul died, David became the king of Judah with his capital in the city of Hebron, right there, capital city of Hebron, in the tribal area of Judah. At the same time, King Saul's son, Ishbosheth, became the king of the remaining 11 tribes. David became the king at the death of Saul in the tribal area of Judah, in Hebron, the capital of Judah, the tribal area of Judah, and all the other 11 tribes in the nation of Israel took Ishbosheth as their king. Okay, the nation of Israel was divided into two kingdoms with two kings. Why was Ishbosheth not mentioned in 1 Chronicles 8:33 as a son of Saul? Well, the simple answer is he was, but by a different name, by a nickname. You see, in 1 Samuel chapter 31, verse 2, we will learn that the Philistines took Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan, Abinadab, Malchishua, the sons of Saul. Those were the three sons that were with him, and they killed them in battle. The fourth son was not killed. Eshbal remained alive. Why do we not know why he was not in the battle with his fathers and his brothers? Well, we don't know why Eshbal was not there with his fathers and his brothers. But here's the deal. Interesting. The name Eshbal, which was named to us in Samuel as one of the sons of Saul, his name means man of Baal, or Baal exists, I should say. The name of Ishbosheth means man of shame. The two are the same person. Ishbal in 1 Chronicles 8:33 and Ishbosheth in 2 Samuel 3:7 were the same. Ishbal was his given name. Ishbosheth was his nickname. And in our study of the Bible thus far, from the book of Genesis all the way through, we have discovered that the Israelites were famous for assigning nicknames to people, places, and things. By the time Ishbal became king, he was a man of shame. More than likely, he was a man of shame because he was not in the most important battle of Saul, his father's life. That's just my conjecture. Furthermore, in 2 Samuel 3, we will find out that Ishbosheth was highly insulted with General Abner when General Abner went into Saul's concubine, her name was Rizpah, and had a relationship with her. And the introduction of Rizpah is an interesting twist in the storyline when we get to it. But we're going to come again to her in the story in 2 Samuel chapter 21, which tells us that David took the two sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Abia, Amoroni, and Mephibosheth, whom she had borne to Saul. She was a concubine. And with that, we learn that Saul had more than four sons because he had two lesser sons with Rizpah by the name of Amoroni and Mephibosheth. Now, by the way, this Mephibosheth is not the Mephibosheth who is the son of Jonathan. Two different Mephibosheths. These two, Moroni and Mephibosheth, that were half-brothers of Ishbosheth. It is for that reason that he had the reaction with Abner that he did. Rizpah was near kin through his half-brothers. And so, when we arrive at chapter 13, verse 1, we're going to read the following. Saul was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 42 years over Israel. And on the face of that, when you look at that, you say, look at that. You see, Jim, Dr. Jim, he was 30 years old, and he reigned for 42 years. Okay. I want you to notice that the words 30 and 40 are in italics. That means something. It means that those two words are nowhere in the verse in the original Hebrew. It is because of this poor translation that many people think that Saul became king at the age of 30. When we read chapter 13, we will explain completely and thoroughly the true meaning and intent and the correct translation of this verse. But with all that in mind, we're going to move on into Samuel's story written by Gad, of the selection of Saul as king. So stick with us until we get to chapter 13, and I'll explain to you why he was not 30 and 40 in that verse. So we are fortunate that the writer tells us about the search for the new king. The reality is Samuel did not have to engage in a search. Even though the Lord said, look for a new king, he didn't have to engage in that search. As always, always, it's the way of the Lord. When the Lord has given direction, the Lord provides. Samuel will not have to search for this king. The Lord will send this new king to Samuel. His wonders to behold how the Lord works. Now the writer tells us just how the Lord operated to bring this new king to Samuel. And it began with Kish's donkeys being lost and gone here in chapter 9, verse number 3. Now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. So Kish said to his son Saul, "Now take with you one of the servants, and arise, go search for the donkeys." He passed through the hill country of Ephraim, and passed through the land of Shalisha, but they did not find them. Then they passed through the land of Shalim, but they were not there. Then they passed through the land of the Benjamites, but they did not find them. Now this passage does not tell us where Kish's home was. But because it was Saul's home on his family's designated plot that had been there since the division of the land in the days of Joshua, Kish's home was in Gibeah, in the tribal area of Benjamin. By the way, this is the same town where the tribes of Israel fought with the tribe of Benjamin and virtually destroyed all the men of Benjamin except 600 who survived, as recorded back in Judges chapter 22. Evidently, Kish's line survived. Gibeah will be the capital of King Saul's kingdom when he's anointed by Samuel, which is coming up in this passage. The tribal area of Ephraim set north of the tribal area of Benjamin, set up north of it. It, like Benjamin, was a small tribal area and could be searched in a relatively short period. Shalisha means triangle area. And what it means when it tells us that, it tells us that Saul made a triangular journey from Gibeah up through Ephraim, took a sharp turn left to head to the land of Shalim. Shalim means the land of the foxes. So let me look at this, and let me just kind of draw this for you. We're looking for him, and what happens is here is Gibeah. Saul leaves Gibeah, goes north. He's going to come up here all the way top. Here's the, let's say this is Benjamin's area, and this is Ephraim's area. He's going to then make a cross turn, and he's going to come down over into, and right here, we'll call this Dan's area. So here's Dan, here's Benjamin, here's Ephraim, and he's going to come over here into Dan's area, and then he's going to head back towards his home, all right? But you have to remember, in order to get back to his home, he's got to go past a little place right here called Ramah. And Ramah is the home of Samuel. Get to that in just a few minutes. So you see where we are. He's going to make this triangular. That's what he's telling us here. Now, if you remember, Shalim means the land of the foxes. So as Saul leaves Gibeah, goes up to the Ephraim, searches the land, turns, and then goes down to Dan. And if you remember, Dan, we remember the story of Samson, and he induced us to the land of the foxes in Samson's story. That's the reason why that story is there also, because we need it for whenever Saul comes down into the land of the foxes and looks in that eastern edge, just the eastern edge, because remember the Mediterranean Sea is out here. And Dan's a little bitty area also. And therefore Saul traveled from the eastern edge, and from that very eastern edge of Benjamin's land, Gibeah Set, he did straight up north and went to the top of Ephraim's land. He then crossed over the mountains of Ephraim over into the eastern portion of Dan's land, and then turned, made a hard left turn and came back towards Benjamin's land from the west to the east. And all of this, he was without success, and he didn't find the donkeys. Now, on his way back to Gibeah, from the land of the foxes, from Dan's area, on his way back to Gibeah, the Lord prolonged the pursuit of Saul, and Saul came to the land of Zuph, verse number 5. And when they came to the land of Zuph, Saul said to his servant who was with him, "Come, and let us return, or else my father will cease to be concerned about the donkeys and will become anxious for us." If you will remember, we were introduced to the land of Zoph or Zoph, depending on your spelling and how it's spelled in the English, to Samuel and Samuel's parents. Samuel's hometown was in Ramah, and it sat in the land of Zoph, west of the city of Gibeon. Got it? The Lord had led Saul to the home of Samuel the prophet. Saul was ready to be home. He was ready to get through Zoph and to get home. So it was when he was almost where the Lord wanted him to be that the Lord is going to get him where he needs to be. And so it is with us. So it is with us. When we get through to the place where we're almost where the Lord wants us to be in life. Yes, yet we are ready to rush on when the Lord is ready for us to wait and to meet Him. When you're just about there, don't rush ahead. Don't kick the doors down, especially when He slows things down. And in our human error, we put our eyes on our desires, not on the Lord's. And that's what Saul was doing. So in the conversation with his servant, Saul's servant knew about Samuel, who lived over here, and he proposed a possible plan in verse number 6. He said to him, "Behold, now there is a man of God in this city, and the man is held in honor. All that he says surely comes true. Now let us go there. Perhaps he can tell us about our journey on which we have set out." So Samuel was fully in control, remember, of Israel at this time, because Samuel's the lead judge. And all of Israel knew Samuel. And Saul's mind was not about Samuel. Why would he have the time to be concerned about a few donkeys? Why would Samuel be concerned and know anything about donkeys? But the servant knew that Samuel had a reputation for telling the future. And if Samuel said it, it was true. So the servant encouraged Saul to at least seek out Samuel to see what Samuel had to say. But Saul knew that he could not seek the knowledge of Samuel empty-handed. You had to take a chicken or something. So the Lord had provided payment already, and it was not in the hands of Saul, but it was in the hands of the servant. Verse number 7. Then Saul said to the servant, "Behold, if we go, what shall we bring the man? For the bread is gone from our sack, and there is no present to bring to the man of God. What do we have?" The servant answered Saul again and said, "Behold, I have in my hand a fourth of a shekel of silver. I will give it to the man of God, and he will tell us our way." Then Saul said to the servant, "Well said, come, let us go." So they went to the city where the man of God was. Now you've seen that I've marked out a passage there. You see it's in parentheses. And anything in parentheses means, in our text, in the New American Standard, it means it was not found in the oldest and most reliable version. Someone had written that out. Some minister had written that out in a note when they copied it. You remember they copied by hand? That accidentally got put in. It doesn't belong there. So it doesn't help us with the story. With a payment in the hand of the servant, Saul had no excuse. In Ramah, the two men headed to see Samuel. Now, they're not even in the city yet, and Saul and his servant ask a young woman about the prophesying prophet in verse number 11. And as they went up the slope to the city, they found young women going out to draw water and said to them, "Is the seer here?" They answered him and said, "He is. See, he is ahead of you. Hurry now, for he has come into the city today, for the people have a sacrifice on the high place today. And as soon as you enter the city, you will find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. For the people will not eat until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice." And afterward those who are invited will eat. Now therefore, go up, and you will find him at once. So they went up to the city, and as they came into the city, behold, Samuel was coming out towards them to go up to the high place. Samuel was in his normal place, doing his normal thing, his normal business, when the Lord brought Saul to him. And so it is the same way when the Lord is doing something for you. Nothing extraordinary is needed. Nothing exceptional must be done. Nothing special must be prepared. If the Lord is going to use us, He will make the way where there seems to be no way. He will make the impossible possible. He will make the improbable probable and the unimaginable imaginable. That's just the way the Lord is. When you need something from the Lord, go do the normal things. When you are a person who is a minister and you need and you're ministering to someone else, you don't need to do something extraordinary. You just need to be in your normal place doing your normal thing, and the Lord will bring to you what He intends for you to do. I want to say it again. He will make the impossible possible. He will make the improbable probable. And He will make the unimaginable imaginable.